This is Radio Influence. This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
And away we go here on a March Madness Thursday, March 15th edition of the Landry Football Podcast. As well, many of you are probably watching the opening of college basketball tournament and enjoying that. Boy, do we have a lot of March Madness going on in NFL world of free agency. With the start of free agency, officially the start of the new league year at 4 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday, we had a lot of activity on Tuesday, as we thought. And then a lot of activity on Wednesday. A lot of activity going on today. Going to get you updated on all the latest and talk a little bit about kind of what it means, why it's happening, and give you some perspective of some of the contracts, why they happen, why some of the mistakes are made, what are good signings as opposed to signings that maybe are real exciting, sound good, but maybe are not the best in terms of where you want to go with your building of your football team. We touched on some of it philosophically, but we want to kind of put it into a better focus for you right now. And a lot of reasons for the changes. I want to remind you, we've got a special going on at LandryFootball.com. You sign up, you're excited about free agency, the draft, and how can you not be interested if you're a fan about what personnel your team's going to have? And what changes they're going to have. It's going to affect, obviously, to a great degree, what your team's going to look like come training camp. So we've got a special that if you sign up now, you can get that. Plus, we're basically taking it half off, so it's like getting the entire football season free. So what a great opportunity to take advantage of that, get the entire football season where we break down the college game, the pro game. Check it out up on the website, LandryFootball.com. We've got notebooks. The notebooks are so full, we kind of do a morning one and an afternoon one, and we certainly are keeping everybody posted. We are certainly still not turning away from our attention on college football, certainly all the draft preparation, but we're doing it in conjunction with the past couple of days being so heavy in free agency. We focused a lot of attention on that. But it is a collaborative effort. As we said, as you get to this time of year, you have made decisions on your roster based upon where you see your needs are and how are you going to fix them. You are far enough into the draft process to get a feel. Although your boards are not set, you get a feel for guys that can potentially help you and how many picks, and you start thinking about how many needs, you know, relative to how many picks you have and relative to how many players can help you improve your football team. All things that are important to know because you can't fix everything. And if you're a bad football team, you're not, I get this a lot, but what about this? You're not going to fix everything in 1 year, which is why the teams that win are consistent builders. They constantly turn over their roster. They constantly evaluate and can anticipate the beginning of a decline of a player, move on from them, get somebody younger, better, cheaper, and allows you to be better at that spot and have more money to improve another spot. If you have a bad year in free agency or the draft, it's going to set you back for a couple of years. And the consistency of how you do it is critical. It is, quite frankly, everything. It is what really determines your ability to be successful on a consistent basis. And, of course, having consistency with your coaching staff and front office and having a really good quarterback that can cover up a lot of things saves you a lot in this league. This NFL is so much about a quarterback and being able to play around them. If you've got that, you just can, you know, look, it's like having a house. You know, you can, you've got the foundation, it's there. You can repaint it. You can change the furniture, the drapes. You can go out in the yard and change the landscaping, plant trees, do whatever you want to do. But you got the house. I mean, quarterback's the house. If you don't have that, then I don't know. You're just replanting and repainting for something that you're renting that's not yours. Important to get that. So, touching a little bit on why free agency plays out this way every year, at the start, there's a wave of news in a rush. Why is that? Well, there are players, what call tier one players, that teams feel like can help them in a big time way. There are not a lot of them, but the few that they are, there are a number of teams that are competing for. So, you got to understand that the market dictates the price, not the quality of the player. Now, of course, the quality of the player determines the supply in the supply and demand formula. I get it. But remember, the quality of the player that is available is only in relation to the quality of player that you have on your team that you're trying to replace. You know, you don't have a chance to go out and sign Aaron Rodgers. You don't have a chance to go out and sign the best players in this league. The best players in the league are already locked up, which is why when we explain to you in our free agent philosophy, it is 80 to 85% a bad value proposition. Doesn't mean that some of these moves can't work out, because you're in a need for a spot and you go spend money. What does everybody say? We got cap room. Go spend it. Well, that's no different than if you've got money. You know, how about saving it? How about investing it? So when you really need it, you can utilize it. Well, if you go out and spend it and you get a better player than you have at your position right now, but he's not a significantly better player, and he's certainly not along the lines of the best players on your roster, but you pay him like that, guess what? You're going to be playing everybody better on that roster, more money, and now all of a sudden your financial structure of your team is completely out of whack. And if you don't do that, then you lose your locker room. Players know who can play and who's contributing to the success, and players know what other players make. And so you got to understand that there are people that let players go because of cap issues and would like to have them back at a cheaper price, but are just going to lose them. So those guys have value. But there again, because they've been productive, you have to, with experience, understand who is potentially still in an up arrow mold or potentially a declining player. You got to know that. You got to have a feel for that. Because you're not signing a player for what he's been. You're signing him for what you anticipate him to be. So you've got some decisions to make. And the reason why we have the flurry is there's a small group of players that people want. And everybody's trying to jump, make the best offer, the quickest offer, and off we go. Now, people have asked me, well, take us into how the process works to get to that point. Well, as you begin to evaluate your needs, your situation, and the players on the market, you know who the agent is. You start to make contact long before this period, and you try to say, hey, look, you know, we'd be interested in so-and-so, like to talk, so on and so forth. And the agent's job is to know what the market value is for that player. Know what other contracts are. Look at the competition and try to work it to his advantage, his client's advantage. So you know what you feel the value is of that player financially and how he fits into your financial structure. And the agent has his view of what he'd like to get on the, you know, on the market. And so you begin to have some conversations. You kind of know, well, this is kind of where it's probably going to be. And so you kind of know. You kind of know what it's potentially going to be like. Well, then it gets a little bit closer, like around the combine time. You have a little bit more discussions. Okay. And, hey, fine line between negotiations and conversations. Okay. You really get to hone in on what the likelihood is get a player, where his he may favor, if there is any. Although a player will always kind of keep it open because he wants his many people to still be interested in him because it plays helps him play the leverage game. Then when it gets to the real process of negotiation, you pretty much already know whether you're in it or not. And everyone talks about, well, they're going to visit. Well, let me just say this. Why do some players visit? Because you're seeing this a lot. Jordy Nelson's taking visits. Austin Seferian Jenkins is taking visits. Kirk Cousins didn't take a visit. They just showed up yesterday in Minnesota to sign his contract. So what's the difference? Well, if you've got a player, you've got a deal pretty much done, you bring him in for a visit. If you don't have the deal done, when you bring him in for the visit, the deal will get done while you're there. If he leaves the building, you're probably not getting him. You're probably not getting him. When you see, and you're starting to see this now, the tier one players, there are a couple of guys that are still there. What do people want to do with Ndamukong Suh? We'll get to him in a second. Still an elite talent, 31. Leopard doesn't change his spots. He's an individualized player. Doesn't fit for everyone. We'll see where that goes. But not everyone's willing to put that type of money his way due to kind of some of his selfish nature. But he's certainly a transcendent football player from a talent standpoint. So players like that visit, and they have a view. They think they're worth 10. I'm not saying 10 million, 10. I'm just using the number 10. Teams feel they're only worth about 5. He goes to one. Hey, it's not close. Okay, I'm going to go take another visit. And it's kind of the same thing and the same thing. When you see a guy is visited, this team and this team and this team and this team, he's not getting the money that he wants. So he's not signing. Well, one of two things happen. He decides to not sign and wait until the price starts to come up because maybe a team has other options and doesn't get those options, and maybe he won't get 10. Maybe he can get 7. Maybe he can get 6. You know, that's kind of what his thought process is. And the more he goes and the more he gets more people in, then maybe he can drive the price up just a little bit. Maybe get 5.5. Maybe he can get it up to 6. That's kind of the way it is. Now, there's a danger with that. As teams turn their attention to another player and they get one, then they've taken you off their board. So they're no longer interested in you. So now you've got one less team interested in your services, and it could hurt your leverage standpoint. So there's always the buy play, and that's part of what the agent can help you get through, as to what you want. Get the money that you want. Teams will often ask the player to take a pay cut. Cardinals ask Tyrann Mathieu to reduce his cap number, his salary. He didn't want to. Thinks he's, you know, worth more and can get more on the market. Forget whether he thinks he's worth more. That's what we think is worth. The market dictates what you're worth. He thinks he can get more in the market. So he's not interested in taking a pay cut. So we'll see what the market dictates, and we'll take visits, and we'll see what's out there, and so on and so forth. But there is a difference, again, with that tier one guy where everyone absolutely wants him. I'm willing to pay top money. He's going to make a difference for us. That guy is targeted, and this year was Kirk Cousins. Vikings felt like they had to have him. The Broncos felt like they needed to have him. Jets felt like they needed to have him. But it was pretty clear that with the financial situation, state taxes have a lot to do with it. Kirk Cousins has a home in Michigan. The state taxes are even less than in Minnesota. Both are significantly less than in New York. So those things factor in a great deal. What you bring, your net income, is what you're dealing with, is what you end up having at your disposal. And I think that the Viking situation clearly was the best in terms of a roster. So it's pretty clear he was headed there. And when people say, you know, when you see Denver moving on, well, Denver moved on because Denver wasn't going to be in the Kirk Cousins deal. You know, well, they weren't willing to go that high. He wasn't interested. Minnesota was where he wanted to go. And basically that deal was done before the quote-unquote tampering period Tuesday. Okay, that deal, you know, maybe the final language and all that, the deal was done, and it was the best one. And at that point, everybody talks about, well, you take, you know, other teams out of it, it reduces your leverage. Well, at that point, it was already done. It was that he had played the Cardinals and the Jets and the Broncos. It was, as we look back at it, Minnesota was the team all along, and it was played out that way. And right or wrong, you get a deal done, you sign a guy, that's who you want. The deal's done before the visit even gets there. Okay, that's the first thing. Second thing is, if you bring a guy in for a visit, you don't let him leave. In essence, you want the guy. You make the offer. It's a really good offer. The agent knows the range of what you're going to get at another place. And if this is the right offer, the team says, this is the offer, you leave the building, we're moving on. Well, then you don't normally let them out of the building. That's basically the way it works. Then you got some other moves that just are cost effective. You know, the Jets go out and sign, basically don't do a deal for DeMario Davis, an outstanding player, a red grade player. Sign Avery Williamson from the Titans, another red grade player. The Saints ended up signing Davis. So my point is, the Jets kind of, you know, they gave up on a player, kind of swapped a player, and, you know, feel they got a better, more cap-friendly deal with the new guy that they signed. But the reality is, if all else is equal, you like to keep your own players. They're in your system. You don't have the adjustment period. So a lot of these moves that take place are exciting. But how effective are these players going to be? How much of a fit in a mesh is going to be something we're not going to determine for some time. Now, there is a lot of movement prior to the start of free agency. And there's a lot of movement as free agency. Why is that? Why are there so many changes? You know, well, yes, there is the desire to win, of course. Pressure by the owner to, hey, we need to show our fan base that we're doing something, we're active, right? Activity means improvement, right? Well, no, not always, but that's the perception. So you're aggressive. That's the same. Boy, I like my GM's being aggressive. Aggressive's great when you're successful. Not so good when you're aggressive and it's not successful, you're just stupid. Look, here's the reality. You want to be aggressive. But aggressive is not going out and signing guys. Aggressive is attacking your needs and making smart decisions. I do think we're living in an era with a lot of young guys that want to make a splash. If, as a GM, I can go out, sign this guy, and make this move, then I've done my job, and then it's all on the coach if it doesn't work out. Well, again, it's a little bit of playing, you know, sides to the owner, and it usually doesn't work out. The key to being successful is working together. Painstaking evaluation of your roster and how can you make it better. And sometimes making it better is signing the players that you do have. But in contracts, they're often backloaded. And so a player has a balloon payment, a balloon contract number for the coming year that's just too high that you've got to reduce down. And you know, player says, I'm not going to reduce it down. I'm going to see what I can get on the market. Well, the best thing for the player and the team would for to be just to stay on that team and continue to develop in that system. That's what makes you better. But you understand it. It's a business. I'm going to jump and play for another team, get more money. Completely understandable. It would be foolhardy for a player to do anything but. And for the team, well, they can't have the huge jump in pay, which is why, again, how you do contracts are important. Given your the ability to be able to maneuver a contract to keep a player if you want them or move on from them and make it purely a football decision as opposed to a financial decision is the key to putting good contracts together. If you why do people backload contracts? Well, one, they can put a huge signing bonus, put a huge guaranteed money figure attached to it, but you need years on the contract to spread it out. Well, that creates a problem. Now, there's some dead money. Look at the Dolphins. They made the big splash in signing Ndamukong Suh. They've decided they're not any close to winning with him. He's not helping them at all. They're moving on. Okay? Well, they saved some cap, they saved some money, but they lose $22 million, $22 million of dead money by releasing him. Again, bad contract. There's bad signings and they're bad contracts. So structuring contracts are really important to allow you the flexibility to make football decisions. But there's a lot of pressure to be aggressive. Okay, but there's other reasons too. About half of the league's coordinators, offensive and defensive coordinators, change this offseason. That increases the desire to go out and find players to fit, to better fit their system. And you normally see them sign guys that they have a connection with from the previous stop. And that's a good thing. The tough thing to do, you can sign the best player around. If you don't, if he's not the right guy, not the right fit in the locker room, it could make a huge mistake. Now, having a connection with a guy and knowing him in the locker room, you know what he is and what he isn't, what his personality is. So having that connection is key. But with so many people changing and then bringing different position coaches along, it's created even more contacts with players that you do know. And in doing that, need a guy that's a little bit better fit for us. We don't have a guy that can play our dime back like we want in our defense. We don't have that guy that's got the ability to play the type of slot receiver we need in our offense. I like this guy. I think he's a better fit than our said guy. And this is how these things go. So that's another big reason why there's a lot of changes. Some news today, kind of up to date. It looks like Danny Woodhead is making his rounds, and the Falcons and the Patriots are very interested. There's going to be a center available due to some health issues. Mike Pouncey's being released by the Dolphins in a big-time makeover there. It saves them $7 million against the cap. But if he checks out, he could help somebody in the interior. So keep an eye out on that. The Chiefs have re-signed Dustin Cook with their punter. It looks like Jordy Nelson is going to end up with the Raiders. Would be a really good fit for that West Coast, that layered passing offense for John Gruden. Mention Ndamukong Suh. I'm going to get to him and the kind of the pros and cons. And he's scheduled a visit. Listen, New Orleans, Seattle, Dallas, New England. First of all, the guy's 31, and he graded out in the blue this past year. And for those of you that listen, you know what blue graded players are. They're elite players in the league. This guy is a talent that's just, well, first of all, you can't coach his talent. And apparently you can't coach him. He is someone that can be very, very disruptive. Literally, figuratively, literally on the field, and to some degree polarizing off the field. And here's what I mean by that. And it's going to be interesting to see where the numbers come in. When he was in Detroit, guy graded out very well. They didn't win. It's not because they didn't win because of him. But he was not the type of guy that was great in the locker room, and he wasn't a leader, and he did his own thing. He signs with the Dolphins, and he gets the big-time money, guaranteed money. He's going to be the guy they're going to build their team around. Okay. And wonders never cease. He's the same type of personality. He freelances. He does his own thing. Yeah, he makes plays, but in the locker room, he's kind of his own guy. You know, not real popular, not someone that people are as comfortable with. And when you have a guy that's your quote-unquote, we're going to build the team around, and he's going to be the leader, and he's going to make the most money, and he does his own thing, everybody else underneath follows suit. In New England, everybody falls in under Tom Brady. Tom Brady's the hardest worker. Tom Brady's team first. Tom Brady does the extra things. So nobody's going to buck the system, A, because they win all the time, and they know how to win. And the key guy, the most untouchable guy, is the biggest leader and the guy that everyone follows. Well, now you take that, and if it's a guy like Ndamukong Suh and he does what he wants, well, the other guys kind of do what they want. They don't follow suit. These are the type of things in the modern day world of fantasy football that fans don't understand. Haven't been in a locker room, never put together a team. They don't know how this effect could have on a team positively or negatively. So it's buyer beware with Ndamukong Suh. Talented, talented player. Could have a huge impact. Could be a factor. It'd be interesting if he went to New England, right? How would that work? Again, can still play. Don't let anybody tell you, this guy's not an overrated player. No. He's overrated as a player in terms of a leader and being able to help his teammates around him. He's very much overrated there. In fact, he's just not very good. But he's a dominant talent. And he still shows up that way on tape, I can tell you that. As the moves continue to come in, we're going to kind of break them down by team, kind of go over different things. But right now, it's fast and furious. I'm not a big, well, these are the winners, these are the losers. That's hairy high school stuff that doesn't mean a whole lot. Wanted to address guaranteed contracts. Kirk Cousins got a guaranteed contract. I'm getting asked about that. Is this a new trend going on in the league? Is this going to change how we do business? It's not. Could there be some quarterbacks in particular that get guaranteed contracts? Yes, we could see it. We could see some two-year contracts guaranteed. We could see with quarterbacks some three-year deals. Absolutely. The way they protect quarterbacks today, outside of specialists, they're probably the safest guys. you could see it. Here's the thing about guaranteed contracts, that first of all, the owners don't really want them. But when you are putting together a huge signing bonus, you're putting the money up front, and all you're doing is prorating the signing bonus over the life of the contract. But essentially, you're guaranteeing that money that you're putting up, and you certainly are not going to cut them in year one. So that's a guaranteed contract in a form, even though it's not a guaranteed contract, if you follow me. So doing a three-year deal on a player with a guaranteed contract is not all that much different than doing one of those aforementioned deals with a huge signing bonus. You're pretty much tied to him. Well, you cut him after year two. You still got that contract. Well, guess what? You've got the accelerated bonus in the other form too. So it might be a little different depending on how you structure it, but it's along the same lines, and it does give the owner a little more time, a little more checks that come in with revenue to pay that off. So it's a big deal. It sounds like a big deal. It's not as big a deal as people think. Now, it's a big deal in terms of maybe other players wanting it. It's just another way for a player to get some guarantee outside of the signing bonus. But we're not going to see guaranteed contracts in the league, not in the NFL. The injury factor is too great, and it just doesn't make sense for our sport. I know it's what players want, and people say, well, the NFL players should get it more than any because they are the ones that are more likely to end their career with injuries, and they're much more likely than a baseball player or a football player to not come back from an injury. So if they've got a four-year contract, they're the ones most likely for their careers to be done after 2 years due to an injury. I get it. You're correct. That's why the players would love guaranteed contracts. But it's the exact reason why the owners don't want it, because they don't want to have to pay years 3, 4, and 5 on a 5-year deal after a player's 2 years. They roll them out and bring somebody else in. So it's not a trend. It can happen in certain spots, particularly at the quarterback spot, but it's not going to be a trend. Oklahoma had their pro day yesterday, looked at the video, did not go, looked at the video, talked to some people that were there. Listen, Baker Mayfield did a good job. Orlando Brown did some good things. But I want to address a little bit of kind of where we're headed towards the quarterbacks. I say it every year, is when we get towards draft conversation, draft talk, you know, it's almost comical because you say it every year, and it just takes a long time for people to catch on that the quarterbacks are going high, folks. They're going high. The whole thought about, well, we can get, you know, Baker Mayfield, you know, we're sitting there, you know, maybe at it, you know, 15, 16. You're not getting them there. These quarterbacks, for the reasons that we mentioned, the same reason why Sam Bradford gets $20 million for the Cardinals is the same reason why all of these quarterbacks are going higher than you ever would think. It's the same reason. It's supply and demand. So the quarterbacks are coming off the board, and again, you can check, see how I have the players graded on the draft board, the horizontal board as well as the quarterback board. You can see how these players are graded. But second-round graded players at quarterback are going in the first round. They always do. I don't think anything happened at the pro day, as some people are speculating. Oh, he made himself some money. He's moving up. No, he's just solidifying where I think he always was going to go, and I think we're going to see these guys go up really high. I want to remind you again, we've got a couple questions to answer here. Remember, if you've got a question, send us one. Contact Chris, and we'll address it here on the website, on the podcast, rather. You can reach us from the website. We've got the draft boards up. the horizontal board, which is the best overall players, the position players. We've got that up for you. We've got the scouting reports on the first round player scouting notes. We're going to obviously continue to provide that for you. So all you got to do is check the draft. We've got the boards. This is how not they're coming off the board necessarily. It's how we see them and how we evaluate them. You know, when we talked about last year that Alvin Kamara was a first-round talent at running back, we weren't projecting that he was going to get taken in the first round or second or wherever. Telling you that's what type of talent he was. That's what scouting is, what scouts do, and that's what we do. And I think he's kind of proven to be that. The fact that he was taken in the third round, that's, again, that's only where he's taken. So we do it a little bit differently. All right. Got a couple of questions here. One is about, I'll try to shorten this a little bit. He wants to know the opinion of these draft analysts. Let's see here. He thinks some of the guys are, you know, insightful, and what do you think about them? And, well, let me just say this. I think that they're entertaining, and what you have to understand about them, we live in a world of hype. We live in a world of we're going to brand something and going to make somebody something, and it doesn't have to be true or not. It's just the way it is. The guys that do this in terms of draft analysts, reporters, whatever, they're reporters. What they do is gather information. They go to the pro days. They talk about they looked at film. What they do is talk to people in the league about players. Get a gauge of what a guy's strengths or weaknesses are, where he might go, and they compile that. And they talk about they're looking at, well, I can tell you, and I'm not saying they don't look at tape, but if you're not trained, if you don't have a deep background in coaching and evaluating talent, and if you haven't done it in this league, you're not qualified to evaluate players. There are a lot of people that think they do. They don't. And I get, you know, annoyed with people when you get the sports talk show hosts, the knuckleheads that think they know who can play and who they can't. They're just guessing. They don't know. And the reality is, I think they do a good job of entertaining fans, and that's what they want. They want people, the league wants people get excited about the draft and the names and my team should take this. No, it should take that. And I hate this pick. I love this. They do a great job with that. And they do provide information. Now, where do they get information? Who talks to them within the league? Well, I know who talks to them in the league. There are certain people that do. It used to be, growing up in the coaching and scouting business, you didn't talk to the media folks. There weren't as many people around. But you did your work, and you kept it in-house. But we've got a new age of people. A new age of GMs and upper management people that love to hear their name on TV, radio, and the press. They think that's the ticket to, you know, getting the GM jobs and all of that to be known. This guy does a great job. And a lot of you hear that when you hear them talk about, well, so-and-so does a great job. That's one of their sources. That's one of the guys that's kind of feeding them information. And it's just, you know, I never did it because if I had to talk to the media, I was put in a position, I would never tell them the real truth of how I felt about a player. See, and a lot of times that's what happens, is they float information. In the information age, you can't stop information. So if you can't stop people from talking about it, what's the next best thing? Feed those guys bad information so that they put information out there that's going to mislead people and throw them off track. I tell the story that when I drafted Eddie George, anyone that, you know, came in contact thought that we had Lawrence Phillips and Tim Biakabutuka as our top two running backs. Why? Because it's what we led them to believe. So there again, these guys are gathering information, putting it out there, and basically it's a lot of misinformation, and then the fans are reading it as gospel, and then if you don't take the guy that the mock drafts say, well, then you made a bad pick, and it's really comical because you purposely are starting from giving them bad information, and those people who are the basically the draft reporters are putting it for the consumption of the fans who are just deciding this and that, and it's purposely from the start, from its roots, trying to throw people off. You think the Bears wanted anybody to know that Mitchell Trubisky was somebody they were willing to trade up to get? Of course not. Now, whether they're right or wrong or not, that'll be determined over time. But you don't want people to know what you're going to do. It hurts your chances. So my feeling is that they do an entertaining job. They're not opinions that I really hold with any value because their background in football, not having coached or scout for years, is not something that's very strong. Now, let me say this. There are a lot of GMs in the league, a lot of people that are moving up or moving across the building from the administrative side that have never coached or scouted either, and some of them make decisions. Howie Roseman is a very celebrated GM. He's an information gatherer. He's not a scout. He's not an evaluator. He's never done that. He has people to do that. And so you're seeing more and more of those type of people talking to these other people who really, don't have the football background. So again, me being a little old school, I'm sure they're great people, but it's not information that's valuable because they're not trained as evaluators. Also get another question about, without the benefit of hindsight in history, what was your true scouting of Ryan Leaf? Can you compare him to recent prospects such as Matt Ryan, Newton, quarterbacks that have been successful? I remember that on the eve of the draft, most media experts favored Leaf over Manning about 60%. And, of course, none of them would admit to that now. Do you agree Peyton Manning may arguably be one of the best prospects? Yes, he was. Leaf has been an incredible prospect to be compared so favorably. Considering Ryan's physical gifts, in addition to carrying that Washington State team to a Rose Bowl, yada, 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 how well did NFL scouting predict his ultimate failure? Well, not very well. Which is why I always say, particularly with quarterbacks, what do I always say about quarterbacks? What is the capacity to learn and willingness to learn? That's going to determine how good a player is going to be. Jamarcus Russell was a bust waiting to happen. Did I have concerns about Ryan Leaf? Yes. I knew Jamarcus Russell would be a bust. I did not think Ryan Leaf would be a bust. I had concerns about him because I knew he was not going to be the hardest worker, and I knew he had some issues character-wise. Not as much as it ended up turning to be, unfortunately, but he's got some issues, had some issues. You didn't get that information out of Washington State. Mike Price backed them wholeheartedly, but if you did your homework, you could find out in his home of Montana some of the trouble that he was in. And this is your job. You've got to be able to find that out. So there was concerns. There just wasn't enough. Not everyone was as comfortable with the information and thought, well, just a little bit immature and he'll be fine. Well, he wasn't. So to answer your question is, did I have Ryan Leaf evaluated correctly? Well, no, first of all, I had him graded. I didn't know exactly how I had him graded, but we also had a shield on him. There was a character shield. So that part was a concern. Now, again, did I think he would be a bust in the league? No, I didn't. No, I thought he would be a guy that would be successful starting the league, be really successful. I thought he maybe had some of Jeff George in him, would play in the league for a long time, bounce around, never be somebody you can count it on. But I thought he'd play with his physical skills. But I didn't trust him. I didn't think he'd go off the deep end. I didn't think he'd be one of the biggest draft busts of all time. No. I did think that about Jamarcus Russell. I knew him very well, and I knew the capacity and willingness to learn on him was very low. So, yes, it is extremely important to be able to ascertain every aspect of a player, and it's the toughest thing we do, the off-the-field stuff. Folks, appreciate you joining us. Have a great rest of the week and weekend. Enjoy the college basketball tournament if you're into that, and we'll keep my eye on it. And certainly going to be working, continuing draft preparation, continuing with all the free agent work for you at LandryFootball.com. want to remind you, if you want to become part of our family, you are interested in us maybe helping your business, contact us, LandryFootball.com. Hit contact Chris, and they'll talk, and we'll have an opportunity to see what we can do to help your business as well through this website. Appreciate you joining us. Talk to you again for another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence. This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
We get to talk to Steve Green from Foodie Chats.
I'm just like you. I mean, we're attached to the hip. It's like you have kids. It's like checking into your kids, checking into your Twitter, your Instagram, your LinkedIn, your YouTube. I mean, all the different places that you're working on. You're just constantly going in there. But you totally nailed it. I mean, a lot of people do just like social media marketing, right? They're just posting, letting people comment back and not really engaging. I mean, you got to have a great ratio of like 10 to 1 engaging versus just marketing. I mean, that truly is the key of also, supporting what others are up to. It's not called media. It's called social media. So, I mean, you got to be social and you have to support your community. Because if you don't, I mean, unless you're a celebrity, right, then then everything comes your way. But if you're not that or not a super influencer, then you definitely have to have the giver's gain philosophy.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.